So the Bible reading today is from Mark's Gospel, chapter 7, and it's reading from verse 24. So it's the story of the Syrophoenician woman. So Mark chapter 7, reading from verse 24. From there he set out and went away to the region of Tyre. He entered a house and did not want anyone to know he was there. Yet he could not escape notice. But a woman whose little daughter had an unclean spirit immediately heard about him, and she came and bowed down at his feet. Now, the woman was a Gentile of Syrophoenician origin. She begged him to cast the demon out of her daughter. He said to her, "Let the children be fed first. For it is not fair to take the children's food and throw it to the dogs." But she answered him, "Sir, even the dogs under the table eat the children's crumbs." Then he said to her, "For saying that, you may go. The demon has left your daughter." So she went home, found the child lying on the bed, and the demon gone. So, here we are. Start of a new year. It's a new decade as well. And I wonder if you've gone along with that tradition of making a new year resolution. Or if you no longer bother, because we know they never last. Especially that one about the dreaded D-I-E-T. I was in the office at work last week, and it wasn't as busy as usual, because quite a few of the staff were off. So, of course, it's a great chance to catch up with the lower priority jobs and the paperwork. The boss and I were clearing out some outstanding tasks, and she said to me, "You know, we should have a new year more often, because it does make you have a clear out and have a fresh start." And that does reflect this frequently held attitude to the new year. It's time for a new start. But, just like my diet, I know the resolution to keep on top of the office paperwork will soon be broken as well. But if we look carefully at the calendar, we can see there are quite a few more New Years coming up, and some more chances to start afresh. I've got a few of them up on the screen, and you can see that most of them are linked to major faiths. We've got our secular New Year, starting on the 1st of January, a Buddhist New Year and a Jewish New Year at the end of the month. February will be the Chinese Year of the Tiger, New Year in the middle of February. Sikh New Year in March, and a couple of days later, the Hindi New Year. And if that wasn't enough, we've got another page of them. A Buddhist New Year in April, Jewish in September. Samhain is the old pagan New Year, which we think of as Halloween, but in Christian times we'd also call it All Saints. Diwali, Hindu New Year. And then, of course, the beginning of Advent is the beginning of the church New Year. So we've got quite a few New Years coming up, another chance for a new start, if 2 days ago wasn't enough. Now, I think the gospel story that we just heard is a story of a new start. A new start for Gentiles in the ministry and mission of Jesus, which makes it a significant story for us here and now. But rather than look at the story in isolation, I'm going to try and set it in its context in Mark's gospel, and also in the period in which it was first remembered and recorded. So I'd like to start by briefly looking at the geography of the area at the time. And there should be a map. There we go. There's a map which we can see here, the region of Galilee, which is in the centre of the map. We've got it marked up with green there. You can see that's where the town of Nazareth is. So this is where Jesus grew up. Israel was divided at this time into the north and south kingdoms. So Judea, which is where Jerusalem and Bethlehem were, is somewhere down here off the bottom of the map, below Samaria. And the map is showing us how the two divided parts of the Jewish nation were surrounded and separated by Gentile areas. Now, as we well know from the scriptures, the Jews, as the chosen people of God, worked hard to keep themselves pure and clean. So these stories which show Jesus venturing into non-Jewish territory would have surprised the listeners. And also his interactions with the people of those areas would have offended the traditionalists, the Pharisees and the scribes, who tried to maintain the religious law of the time. And we can maybe think of this in our own lives too. We can so easily want to stay as Christians within the church, or maybe within isolated communities. But this story, I think, challenges us to venture out into the wider world. For us, here and now, maybe that's the world of work. Maybe it's our social lives and the activities that we do in a voluntary capacity. It could be as we meet with non-Christian friends and family. And here in Wales as well, we've got a language divide and possibly culture too between the Welsh and English speaking communities in this area. It can be so easy to run the risk of thinking ourselves special and privileged, and run the risk then of wanting to stay in our own little communities. We only want to mix with people who are just like us. But if we really want to follow the example of Jesus, then this story shows us that it is important to venture out of our churches and chapels and be ready to find faith in unexpected places. I found a story of faith in work not so long ago. It's a true story told to me by somebody who hasn't got anything to do with this or any other church. I don't think she would describe herself as a Christian, but she had previously told me that her mother is close to God in prayer every day. Her mother lives in a house nearby, in her own house, close to her daughter, and her daughter calls on her every day, does the shopping, does the messages. And the daughter came up to me and said to me that her daughter told her the other day that she prays to God every day to enable her to stay in her own home, and God is answering that prayer. "What do you mean?" said her daughter. "It's me who does your shopping, takes you to the surgery, looks after you, does everything for you." "That's right," said the mother serenely. "God is using you to answer my prayers." Going back, though, to the map, just to point out here, we're putting the story of the Samaritan woman who met Jesus by the well into its context. When he travelled through Samaria, he met the Samaritan woman there, and also the story of the Good Samaritan. They were living outside the territory that Jesus usually were into. And there are other instances of Jesus' mission to the Gentiles, which might not be so apparent to us without being aware of the geography, and they would have meant a lot to those first century Christians. So if you've just got your Bible in front of you, or maybe when you get home, if you scan right to the beginning of Mark's Gospel, and we can see that Jesus, the opening chapter, we can see that Jesus' ministry, when he started up, he came from Nazareth of Galilee and was baptized in the Jordan. We can see that his ministry in those early stages was in the area of Galilee. He traveled around places such as Capernaum. You can see that to the northwest of the Sea of Galilee, and his home in Nazareth. And his travels stayed mainly within Jewish territory until we come to chapter 5 and the story of the Gadarene swine. So this was on the other side of the lake, in the region of the Decapolis. These were Greek cities off to the east of Galilee. And there were about 10 cities there. And you can remember from this story, Jesus cast out an evil spirit from a man. And all these spirits went into a herd of pigs who ran over a steep bank and drowned in the lake. The local people were so terrified that they asked him to leave the area, which he did. So I'll return to that point. But after this story, just to bring us up to where we are, Mark records more travelling back within the area of Galilee until we get to the first part of chapter 7, which is entitled The Tradition of the Elders. And it starts with criticism of the disciples because they didn't do this ritual washing of their hands before eating. And this was so much more than basic food hygiene. It was part of the way in which the scribes and Pharisees controlled the way that the people worshipped. And Jesus was highlighting in this text here that they were adhering to the letter, but not necessarily the spirit of the law. It was this radical and outspoken attitude that attracted so much opposition from these earthly powers. So maybe at the beginning of the story we read earlier about the Syrophoenician woman, he was escaping to the region of Tyre, which was outside Galilee, up to the left, right, you can see it at the top there. He escaped that region, and he didn't want anybody to know he was there while things cooled down. But I think what's more shocking to our own 21st century Western view of Jesus is not so much his venturing out of his own territory, but the way that he spoke to the woman in this particular story. How does this fit into our view of Jesus? We think of Jesus as a healer. He's a friend, he's our friend, he's a friend of tax collectors and sinners. He's the good shepherd who looks after his flock, the Holy One of God. But what did he say to this woman? Let the children be fed first, for it's not fair to take the children's food and throw it to the dogs. Now, after his rejection by the Gentiles, after the episode of the swine, then maybe this was only to be expected. He didn't want to rush back in. So what association do we have now when somebody's described as a dog? A dirty dog, mangy cur. And when it's used to describe a woman, of course, in the feminine form, to describe someone as a bitch is not very pleasant. Can we really imagine Jesus saying this? Commentators say that the word translated as dogs means family pets, or maybe puppies. We all like our puppies and our pet dogs. But the way we tend to read it now, there is initially a definite, firm, even rude rejection of this woman and her appeal on behalf of her daughter. And I was trying, as I was thinking myself into this story, to try and imagine how I would have felt if I'd had that initial response from Jesus. Would I have had the faith to persist? Would I have asked again? But this is Jesus, God incarnate, that we're talking about. We worship a God who knows and cares about each one of us. Even the hairs on your head are all counted. I think he must have realized how this woman would react. And the spirited reply which she gave demonstrated her faith. And of course, she was rewarded. In this story, I feel that we can see that Jesus responded to her in a way that she could cope with. She was used to rejection, after all. She was a woman in a patriarchal society. But she was also able to respond in faith to show her understanding of who Jesus was and of his ministry and mission in a way that the Pharisees and the scribes did not. In this, she not only had an answer to her prayer, but she in a way invited Jesus back into the world of the Gentiles. And this is an important point to remember. Jesus does not impose himself on people, but he waits to be invited into our hearts and into our lives. And in thinking of this, I'm sure you're familiar with the picture of Jesus in the painting The Light of the World by William Holman Hunt. It's a picture of Christ holding a lamp. He's wearing a crown of thorns, standing at a closed door, which is partially covered with overgrown weeds. He's knocking at the door. When you look carefully at the door, you can see there's no handle on the outside. It can only be opened from the inside to let him in. So, what can we learn from this story at the start of our new year? Maybe we can see that when we venture out of our churches and chapels, faith can be found in the most unexpected of places. Maybe we can see that although we may experience rejection, as we witness in our workplaces and in our lives, we're not going to be given anything more than we can cope with. And we can also see in this story that persistence in prayer is vital. Persistence and continually asking. And also that every day gives an opportunity for a new start.